Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The test summer is rolling on, and of course we're going to the Adelaide Oval. You'll hear it all across the SEN network. It starts 3 o'clock Eastern time. Widely respected cricket journalist Malcolm Conn from the Sydney Morning Herald and the Nine newspapers is there, has written a couple of articles today of great interest. Nathan Lyon and Dennis Lilly, two legends of Australian bowling. Did very different eras, very different ways, but I'm great to say that Malcolm is on the line from Adelaide. G'day, Mal.
G'day, Jimmy.
How are preparations going? I believe you had a quick word with Pat Cummins yesterday. We're going to have more today from a fitness test point of view, but as a betting man, does he play tomorrow?
Well, he thinks he's a chance. He did about half an hour of pretty solid run-throughs yesterday and then did a bit of light sort of catching and throwing. And I grabbed him as he was coming off and we just had a quick chat. And he said, oh, no, mate, I feel pretty good, but. But he did say he was going to try and have a bowl today, so which is most unusual because usually the fast bowlers and the bowlers generally take the day off before a test match. But obviously this is a fitness test that he's got to get through. I mean, I think the bigger picture is why is he here at all? I mean, maybe he feels some sort of responsibility as captain that he has to be sort of in and around the team. But the uncompetitive nature of the West Indies, the way they were beaten so comprehensively in Perth and the enormous amount of cricket they've got coming up over the next year or so, you think that he might have gone straight from Perth to Sydney and spent a week getting treatment there and then sort of headed up to Brisbane for the first test against South Africa, which starts in 10 days or so. So we'll see how he goes later today. They train at, they start training around 2:30 Sydney time. So we'll get a better idea then of whether he's going to front up.
Yeah,
but as I said, I'm surprised he's here at all.
It's a very good point that you make, Mal. And we talked about it yesterday on this program, and that is, why is he playing this game? Not just because of the fact that they've retained the Sir Frank Worrell Trophy, the fact that they've got these big test matches coming up against South Africa, then the Tour of India, then the Ashes, and then, of course, a 50-over World Cup. So lots of cricket coming up, so an opportunity. So the greater question for me there is, Mal, who's making the decisions internally with this Australian cricket side? We know that Pat's the leader and we know he's a strong leader, but surely at some stage Andrew McDonald has to protect him from himself and say, well, this is what's best in your long run, Pat. Is he getting that, do you think?
Well, it's an interesting one. I mean, in the end, the general sort of conversation around that is, oh, well, we trust the players, the senior players, they understand their body. And the other thing that McDonald did say after the test match was, well, he's in the hands of the physio at the moment and we wait until he's handed over, and he hasn't been handed over. And certainly yesterday he did all his work with the physio, so he's still in that sort of recovery mode before they make a decision. But I would have thought on the balance of probability that you just don't take risks. I mean, he's with such a valuable commodity. He's the number one fast bowler in the world by a fair margin, and you'd see why the way he bowled in the first innings of the first test. And I hope that, like even Cummins said himself after the test match, well, you don't want to turn a one-week injury into a four-week injury.
Yeah.
So he's got to be very wary of that, and he's got to be very wary of his wider responsibilities to the team about not sort of putting himself off when he's not right. So I don't know whether he's feeling that as the captain that he has to make it more of an effort, but gee, they want to be careful.
Yeah, no doubt. If he's out, is it straightforward? Scott Boland comes in.
Yeah, okay. That's just a straight swap. Scotty's ready to go. He's the only bowler who bowled yesterday at training. The others all had a break. Even the Nesser and Lance Morris, who flew in, have just come out of a Shield game, so they gave him the night off as well. So, but yeah, Boland's ready to go, and I think on an Adelaide pitch, which these days does have a green tinge to protect the pink ball, that he could be quite a valuable commodity if he gets the opportunity.
You wrote an article today about Lance Morris, and linked to that, you know, you've got a tearaway fast bowler from Western Australia. So Dennis Lilly's name is there, has been for the last five decades with the Australian cricket. Can you quantify, Mal, the impact that Dennis Illy has had overtly or discreetly on Australian fast bowling ranks in the last 40 years? Because every time a young fast bowler seems to be finding some sort of issue, they refer themselves to Dennis Illy, and it all seems right after that.
He's made an enormous impact, there's no doubt. And he's sort of almost sort of reclusive in a public sense these days. He doesn't sort of mix in wider public circles. You don't see him at many functions or anything like this. But he's still got a great passion for cricket and for fast bowling in particular. And he's often sort of asked to have a look at young players coming through just to see what he thinks of them and whether they need to do any tweaks to his action. And his big mantra is that they've got to have a safe action. They've got to make sure that their feet and their hips and their back are all lining up so that they don't put undue stress on their back and break down, as Lilly so famously did in the early 70s. Yeah. So he's well aware of all the pitfalls and knows what to look for. And Pat Cummins sort of idolises him. I mean, Pat Cummins said, look, he was my idol when I was growing up, and he's been a wonderful mentor, either sort of when I've worked with him coming back from injury or on the phone, just to sort of give you a bit of encouragement and to point you on the right path. So, look, I think it'd be really hard to quantify the influence he's had, but it was actually even interesting with Mitchell Johnson, when Johnson was brought down from Townsville to a training camp, and Rod Marsh was there as academy coach, and he rang Lilly straight away and mate said, I think I've got you one here. So Lilly subsequently went and had a look at Mitchell Johnson, and they did a little bit of work together. I mean, Lilly says he doesn't like to change too much. If a guy's bowling fast and it's working for him, then you don't want to mess him around, as long as his action's not going to cause him any problems down the track. And one of his pieces of advice to Lance Morris was, mate, just don't listen to too many people. This is all you have to do. A couple of small tweaks to your action. You're going really well. You've got a great future if you work hard, build your body up. And here we are. He's now in the test squad.
Yeah. What an incredible resource for Australian cricket. And as you say, down through the generations, reaping the benefit of that. The other article that you wrote today, this was the one that surprised me as well, that Nathan Lyon is to become the most successful bowler at the Adelaide Oval in its 140 years of Test cricket. This sort of snuck up on us, Mal, to think he can go past Shane Warne, with whom he's tied with at the moment, in fewer Test matches at a better than average, is just incredible.
It is, isn't it? And it just shows sort of he's sort of been the invisible sort of part of the attack. Everyone sort of talks about the quicks and the damage they can do and the success they can have, but Nathan's been such an integral part of this team from now on, over a decade now. Yeah. And if you look at his record, he's got 446 test wickets. Just think about that, 446 test wickets. Yeah. For a bloke who's sort of, you know, the anonymous off-spinner just holding up an end. So he's been marvellous, and he's a terrific bloke around the team too. I mean, you can see why Mike Hussey handed over the song to him years ago, because he's a terrific character, but he's also made of stern stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I want to ask you a question. It's a philosophical one, Mal, and you may have spoken to people in and around the Australian cricket side, but do they look at what England have done in the most recent test match against Pakistan, and, you know, Baz Ball and Ben Stokes' aggression and how inventive Brendan McCullum is, and recognise that, well, there's this big Ashes series coming up, and, you know, in many ways they're playing the West Indies, but they're playing more than that. They need to play a particular style, or could play a particular style that they know for test series coming up. Do you think that test and the manner in which they've played over the last 6 months, England, is having any impact on Andrew McDonald and the way he is approaching games for Australia?
Well, it's an interesting question. Nathan Lyon was asked about this yesterday, and he said, no, we play cricket our way. It was terrific to watch, really enjoyed it. But I think the Australians, from reading between the lines from Nathan Lyon yesterday, and just a sort of more of a greater feel around the team, is that is a high-risk, high-reward way of playing.
Yep.
And that with the quality of Australia's attack in England, where the pitches may do a bit, that it may not reap the same rewards. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think we'll see a clash of philosophies, you could say.
Yeah.
And it's also going to be interesting to see what pitches England roll out, because the Poms sort of used to get very sanctimonious about all sorts of things, but they had absolutely no qualms about making the pitches exactly how they wanted them. And if they want flat pitches for baseball, then they might get them. The counterweight to that is that one of their most effective bowlers is still Jimmy Anderson at the age of 40. So they might take their own bowlers out of the equation if they're not careful. So it's going to be interesting to see how they go. But I think the Australians, because they've been successful over a decent period of time, and they've got a quality, experienced attack, that they would back themselves to cause some early damage against people who play like that.
Everyone's had an opinion on it, Mal. I'll ask yours because you're a lot closer to it than most. But the crowds were disappointing, although we had a text message yesterday talking about the crowds at the Wacker Ground in 2009 and 1992 and how similar they were to the ones over the course of the weekend. The feeling that this Australian cricket side is not beloved by the Australian sporting public. What's your take on all of that that's been swirling around and the disappointment around some TV numbers and live crowds?
Yeah, look, I wouldn't get too carried away by that. And if you look through Perth's history at the Wacker, they averaged 46,000 for a test match at the Wacker over, since 1970 when they first started playing there.
Yep.
And they got 42,000 against the no-name West Indian side when cricket was dominated by the T20 World Cup and we've still got the Soccer World Cup going on. So, look, I don't think that this Australian side is the problem. I think that the problem is that whatever cricket is doing in Perth, it's not working to get people to test cricket. And the crowds, you know, you can say, oh, they're about average, and they were about average, but it's really not good enough. Like,
yeah.
It sort of, when it was at the Wacker and there was sort of like a capacity of 20,000, and if you got more than sort of, say, 13 or 14,000, is it got uncomfortable because you're sitting in plastic seats in the sun?
Yes.
Well, the Optus Stadium is a magnificent modern stadium. It's a wonderful place to watch sport. So really, Cricket Australia and the West Australian Cricket Association have to have a really good think about what they're going to do to try and attract more people to test cricket. It's not expensive in the realm of elite entertainment. It's you can get a ticket for adult ticket for $30 and a kids ticket for $10. I think there are family tickets as well. So you can have a reasonable day out in terms of cost and in a very comfortable venue. Unfortunately, when you go from the 20,000-seat Wacker to the 60,000-seat yes. Optus Stadium, 15,000 looks very sparse. So
yeah.
I think there is a problem there, but I think that's a long-term problem of Perth as opposed to a short-term problem of the Australian cricket team. And I think we'll see here in Adelaide, the Adelaide members, the SACA members really do turn out and support their test match. And I think that we'll see some pretty reasonable crowds here against a nondescript opponent.
Yeah, well, it is a gorgeous ground, one of the most picturesque in world cricket. It starts tomorrow. Mal, you're covering it all for the Sydney Morning Herald. Really appreciate your time this afternoon.
No worries, Jimmy. Thank you.
If you're enjoying this podcast, make sure to tune in from midday, Monday to Thursday, till 3 p.m. on 1170 SEN.